I'd like to extend a warm welcome to you all this morning. And today we're going to be looking at the story of Jesus calming the storm. Of course, we all experience storms in life as circumstances come upon us and create perhaps a lot of anxiety and stress that we could probably do without. But the thing is with storms is that they clear the air. And we're going to be looking at how this storm, with regard to the disciples, in relation to our own life, clears the air and prepares us for moving on in our spiritual growth and development. Now, it's interesting that in Matthew's Gospel, in the 16th chapter, Jesus rebukes the leaders of Israel for being able to tell the signs of this in terms of the weather, but not being able to tell the signs of the times. And often we too are like that. We know a storm is coming. We can see the clouds gathering on the horizon. We know the sorts of winds that bring storms to our area. And so we can make a reasonable guess as to what the weather is going to be. But the interesting thing about the storms that strike us within is that they often hit us suddenly, without warning, and we feel totally unprepared for them. This is the nature of the spiritual life. But the thing is, we can be prepared. We can be prepared to the best that we can be by keeping in the Lord's Word. You see, the Lord's Word tells us with regard to those signs that bring or preempt a storm coming in our life. Spiritual walk involves temptation. We cannot avoid it. And that temptation results in internal turmoil. We will read today from the Arcana about how things must be made chaotic before they can be returned to order. This is true within our own lives. Let us pray. This morning is from the book of Psalms, reading Psalm 107, verses 23 to 32. Those who go down into the sea in ships, who do their business on great waters, they see the works of the Lord and His wonders in the deep. For He commands and raises the stormy wind, which lifts up the waves of the sea. They mount up to the heavens, they go down again to the depths. Their soul melts because of trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like drunken men, and are at their wit's end. Then they cry out to the Lord in their trouble, and He brings them out of their distress. He calms the storm so that its waves are still. Then they are glad because they are quiet. So He guides them to their desired haven. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for His goodness and for His wonderful works to the children of men. Let them exalt Him also in the assembly of the people, and praise Him in the company of the elders. From the fourth chapter of the Gospel of Mark, reading verses 35 to 41. On the same day, when evening had come, He said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took Him along in the boat as He was, and other little boats were also with Him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But He was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke Him and said to Him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then He arose and rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But He said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him? From the Heavenly Doctrines from the Apocalypse Explained, paragraph 514. Jesus, having entered into a ship, his disciples followed him, but behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with waves. But he was asleep, and his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the sea, and there was a great calm. This represented the state of the men of the church when in a natural and not yet a spiritual state, in which state the natural affections, which are various desires that spring from the loves of self and the world, rise up and cause various disturbances of the mind. In this state the Lord appears to be absent, and this apparent absence is signified by the Lord being asleep. But when they came out of the natural into the spiritual state, then those disturbances ceased, and tranquility of mind succeeds. For the tempestuous passions of the natural man are calmed by the Lord when the spiritual mind is opened, and the Lord flows through that into the natural. Since the affections, which are of the love of self and the world, and thence the thoughts and reasonings, are from hell, for they are lusts of every kind, which thence rise up into the natural man, therefore these also are signified by the wind and the waves of the sea, and hell itself is signified in the spiritual sense by the sea. The storm. In our journey through Mark's Gospel, we now come to a story that bridges the Lord's teaching using parables, and perhaps one of the most graphic descriptions of demon possession and deliverance in the Gospels, namely the healing of the man with the legion of demons, which we'll be looking at next week. These things are, of course, descriptions of the Lord's activity within us. And in order to gain a fuller, deeper sense of what is being described here, we need to look at these storms, which are characteristic of the Sea of Galilee. The Lord was teaching on the northwestern shore of the lake. Now, beyond the bounds of this body of water, the terrain climbed fairly steeply, eventually forming a mountainous region to the north and west between 2,000 and 4,000 feet high. The layout of these steep areas, interspersed with valleys, lent themselves to funneling cool air from the Mediterranean down onto the lake, which was bathed in much warmer air, being some 700 feet below sea level. When the cooler air descended and struck the lower air, there was a clash in temperatures, and this caused violent air movements, and therefore set up the conditions for sudden and violent storms. Now, these storms are a relatively frequent occurrence on the Sea of Galilee, and a lot of them last no longer than 10 minutes. However, despite the shortness of their duration, the force and power of the storms was such that even those who made their living from it as fishermen feared being caught in one. This fear, or perhaps respect, for the forces of nature meant that most of their fishing was done reasonably close to the shore. If they needed to, they could make advances towards the shore and be out of danger's way. Their boats were smallish, open, wooden craft. They had a sail. The sail really only served to assist them when they could run before the wind. Otherwise, they were propelled by oars, and they had no rudder as such, but were steered from the rear with an oar over the stern. Now, the ferocity of these storms is captured in the language that is used here. In the Greek, the term windstorm is the term for a whirlwind. And it's described here in our story today as not just a whirlwind, but a great whirlwind. Make no mistake, these storms were frequent occurrences, but this particular storm was exceptional in its strength. So much so that these experienced fishermen feared for their very lives. Now, we know that winds play an important role in the dispersion of airborne pollutants. The movement of air in the atmosphere allows for the movement, dispersion, dilution, and even for chemical transformations of toxic elements in our atmosphere. So they are rendered relatively harmless to life, and it therefore plays a vital role in the purification of the air we need to breathe. Now, it's interesting to note that in many languages, not least the languages of the word, it's Hebrew and Greek, we have one word meaning both wind and spirit. It's the same word. Now, this is a key idea that we need to keep hold of as we go through our text this morning. Now, as far as we're concerned, we breathe air in order to provide our bodies with oxygen. The organ that is used to achieve this end is, of course, our lungs. Now, the lungs facilitate the removal of gaseous waste products from the bloodstream and reinvigorate it with fresh oxygen to be distributed by the heart to every cell in our body. Now, the activity of atmospheric air movements and the way air is taken into the lungs and used by our bodies correspond to spiritual phenomena in the spiritual realm. Think about the relationship between the heart and the lungs. The heavenly doctrines teach that these two great organs, the heart and the lungs, correspond to the two great spiritual faculties of the will and the understanding. Now, if you've been following the Foundation Stones series in Living Waters, you'll be well aware of the will and the understanding being that which makes up the spiritual structure of every person. But at times, these sorts of correspondences can seem a little abstract. How can we know that the lungs correspond to the understanding and the heart to the will? We're perhaps a little more accepting of the idea of the will being the seat of our affections as corresponding to the heart. Common use of language associates love with the heart or with our affections. But what about the lungs? The association of the lungs with the understanding is not such a common idea held within our language today. And this is where function is so important, understanding the connection between natural things and spiritual things that correspond to each other. If we accept that the heart corresponds to the will, we can see in its relationship with the lungs the relationship between the will and the understanding. Now, as mentioned, the primary function of the lungs is to bring about the purification of the blood. Correspondentially, we can say that the primary function of the understanding is to bring about the purification of a person's affections. And now we know this to be true, as our experience of the processes of spiritual growth are that we are able to judge the quality of our motivations from the quality of the thoughts that arise from them within our minds. And this ability to look at what's passing through our inner world and to judge its source, heaven or hell, comes from our understanding of the principles of love that we have learnt from the Word. Air is held within the lungs. Therefore, air must correspond with what is held within the understanding. And what does the understanding hold? Well, it holds ideas, concepts and principles, things to do with mental activity. What then of wind? Well, wind is air in motion. In the case of our story, we see air being channeled from the heights into the lower regions, causing a clash due to differences in air temperature that results in an incredible degree of agitation due to it producing this great windstorm. This channeling of the wind through those valleys is not unlike the process of air passing into our lungs, which is drawn down into ever smaller tubes to its destination. What begins as a gentle breath across the back of the throat gathers momentum and force as it is drawn deeper and deeper towards the receiving organ. Now let's see if we can pull all this together in regard to the story we're focusing on today. I mentioned that this story bridges the gap between the Lord teaching his disciples and the crowd in parables and his encounter with the man possessed by a legion of demons. So that we can see that we have described here some form of intermediary state in our spiritual growth and development. It is a state of progression, for we know that all journeys from one place to another in the Word speak of a progression from one spiritual state to another spiritual state. We also know that it is the Lord who has initiated this movement, for it is He who said to those with Him, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now, when the Lord speaks in His Word, it internally corresponds to our understanding, or that inner voice which is communicating to us what the Word is wanting us to do, its teaching. Now, we've spent some time getting a feel for the spiritual principles contained in the parables over the last few weeks, particularly the parable of the sower. And we saw that the opening words to the parable of the sower, which are attend and perceive, or akouo in Greek, idio, powerfully illustrates our need to listen, attend, and do the word in order that we might perceive or understand. Without doing in spiritual matters, there is no understanding, no true understanding given. This is a spiritual law. So here in today's story, we see the progression from hearing, sitting on that seashore, listening to the Lord teaching in parables, to doing, to moving out, to making that move across to the other side. Every person who has attended to the Lord's word and is now seeking to do, hears that they must pass over to the other side. What does this mean? Well, for every person who seeks to follow the Lord in obedience to His word, there are times for receiving instruction and there are times to act. The story begins with the phrase, "On the same day when evening had come." The same day as what? It is the day of instruction in the principles of the kingdom of God as contained in those parables that the Lord taught. And we know that that time of instruction is drawing to a close as the word states, evening is coming on. It is time to do. The evening, while speaking of a close in terms of a state of life, in this case a closing off of a state of receiving instruction, also speaks to our unsureness of what it is we must do or how it is we are to do. It is often the case that in hearing the word taught or in our personal study of things in the word, it seems so clear. We make the connections. Our vision is lifted. We gain a sense of excitement and insight. We gain a sense of what is possible spiritually. Yet, when we leave off our study and move back out into the world and seek to apply what we know, what we have learnt, we find ourselves really struggling. We find ourselves actually in the dark, so to speak. Or at least we experience evening coming on. If the side we are on is one of instruction, then the other side has to be one of application. The cool, refreshing breath that delivered teaching about the heavenly life, having made its way down from the lofty heights of the source of love and wisdom into the natural mind, represented by the oklos, or the crowd, meets the natural heat and activity of selfish thoughts and motives, and we seem somewhere in between, caught in that place between those higher ideas, aspirations, and those things that rise up from below within us. We understand that we need to be more loving and understanding people. But we have many delights based in our selfishness that rise up and prevent this from happening, from becoming fulfilled in our lives. We hear the word, but when we enter back into the daily grind of life, we activate the habits and patterns we are used to using in navigating our way through the day, so that the things of the word drop out of consciousness. And we are taken by forces which we don't even think about. We have forgotten the lessons of the Lord's parables, of those in the wayside and what it means, those in the stony and thorn-ridden grounds. We have forgotten about our potential to be planted in the good ground of love. As our natural concerns begin to be stirred up in our consciousness and take center stage in our natural minds, so we enter into the heat of its lusts. We strike for the other side in obedience to our understanding of the need to apply what we know to life. But we do so in our boat, on our terms. The motives are mixed, and it is more about what we can get for ourselves from following the Lord rather than a true concern for the spiritual well-being of others. Strange thing in that story. It talks about that there are other boats there as well. Other ways of living on this sea of life. And the interesting thing about those other boats is that they are said to be with the Lord. But these other boats, they are described as being little, which tells us that in this state of life, spiritual things with the Lord, connected with the Lord, are small or of little consequence in our thinking. And this is also reflected in the Lord being asleep at the height of the storm. His sleeping corresponds to those occasions when our spiritual consciousness wanes due to the intrusions of natural life. When spiritual things take second place in our lives to natural concerns or pursuits. So then, natural anxieties and cares rise up and begin to choke out our spiritual life. Our emphasis on fulfilling purely natural desires and aspirations causes clouds of selfishness to gather, heat to rise, which warp our perspective of ourselves, of others, and of the Lord. There is a part of us that wants to run with this selfishness, but there is also another part of us that wants to see the promise of a life fulfilled based on unselfish heavenly loves coming to fruition in our lives. This latter part is the Word descending into our consciousness from the heights. We give our mental assent. We agree, yes, that is what we want. But our will has yet to enter into agreement. And so we find ourselves embroiled in inner conflicts as lower desires resist the heavenly vision. The sea begins to churn, and the wind gains strength. How graphically the power of nature depicts the powers found within our natural minds. For the natural mind, steeped in self-centeredness, is the ground for every hellish thought and affection. The heavenly doctrines teach that hellish spirits, or winds, the Greek word pneuma means both wind and spirit, that these hellish things have no greater delight than in destroying a person's capacity to be truly loving and understanding in their relationships with others. It is therefore no surprise at all that once having heard the teaching of the parables, such a storm follows. For any ground of self-orientated thought or affection in us will rise up, the heat will rise to defend keeping its presence alive within our minds. This is the nature of the hells. The Lord, however, is merciful. He allows us to battle those elements within, for it is in the battle that we come to see things as they really are. No human being, in their own strength, can contain the ferocity of those hellish forces that lie just below the surface in us all. Yet we believe we can keep check on our negative emotions. After all, we have all had the experience of feeling anger, resentment, envy or hatred, and of not letting it get the better of us through venting it on the person we see as its cause. The heavenly doctrines teach us that it is the Lord alone who keeps such things in check, not us. We have absolutely no power over these things, despite the appearance. He keeps them in check through either the operation of hellish forces or of heavenly loves, depending on the state of the person within whom these negative states are active. Yet we feel the battle as our own. Just as these self-reliant fishermen, experts in the control of such a boat, would have drawn on every skill and ounce of strength they could muster to battle the storm. And only then, when it seemed absolutely hopeless, their boat flooded, in the Greek, filled with water. When they came to the end of trusting in their own abilities, then, as natural life seemed to overwhelm them, they called on the Lord. They turned to the living Word, seeking to awaken their spiritual consciousness. and it speaks, replacing the great storm with a great calm. The lessons are clear and we need to give them our attention. Firstly, despite appearances to the contrary, the Lord is always in control. There is nothing over which He does not have authority and power. No evil is so great that it can overpower you if you trust in and call upon the Lord's assistance. Temptation or the reorganization of your being, if you choose to follow spiritual truths, will bring inner conflict and struggle. It is unavoidable. But we must learn to trust the Lord, for He knows what He is doing with us. Just in closing, I would like to read a reasonably lengthy passage from the teachings of the Church, from the work of the Arcana Celestia, that speaks to the themes we've been focusing on this morning. So just relax and listen to what is said here. All spirits, both good and evil, are compared and likened to the wind, and are even called winds. And in the original language, the same word is used for spirits as for winds. In temptations, meant here by the waters that subsided, as shown already, evil spirits who deluge are present. With their delusions, they flow in wave upon wave and activate kindred delusions residing with a person. When these spirits or delusions are dispersed, the word speaks of it as being done by means of a wind, and in fact by an east wind. Evil spirits in the world of spirits sometimes group together in squadrons and in this way create disturbances. But they are broken up by other squadrons of spirits, pouring out mostly from a position to the right, from the eastern quarter, therefore, who strike so much fear and terror into them that they think only of taking flight. At that point, those who have grouped themselves together are scattered in all directions, and in this way the communities of spirits, drawn together for evil purposes, are dissolved. The squadrons of spirits who disperse them in this fashion are called the East Wind. In addition to this, there are countless other ways of scattering them. And these too are East Winds, which will, in the Lord's divine mercy, be dealt with later on. When evil spirits have been dispersed in this fashion, a kind of calm or silence follows the state of disturbance. A similar situation exists with the person undergoing temptation. While undergoing temptation, he is amid the throng of such spirits. But when they have been driven away or dispersed, a kind of calm descends, which is the start to an arranging of all things into order. Before anything is restored to order, it is very common for everything to be reduced first to a state of confusion, resembling chaos, so that things that are not compatible may be separated from one another. And once these have been separated, the Lord arranges them into order. Phenomenon comparable to this takes place in nature. There too, every single thing is first reduced to a state of confusion before being put in its proper place. Unless atmospheric conditions included strong winds to disperse alien substances, the air could not possibly be cleared, and harmful, toxic substances would accumulate in it. The same applies to the human body. Unless all things in the bloodstream, those that are alien as well as those that are congenial, were flowing along together unceasingly and repeatedly into the same heart where they are mixed together, the vital fluids would be in danger of clotting, and each constituent could not possibly be precisely disposed to perform its proper function. The same also applies to a person's regeneration. Amen.